Radio Live's Rural Exchange. Thanks to Carter's Tyre Service.
If you drove down K Road about now, most people are sort of pouring out of clubs and bars, and we're a bit of Earth, Wind and Fire. We'll be wrapping up. Meanwhile, we are here. The backbone of the rural community.
We've got to amp ourselves up.
Too right. We've got to feel like we just rolled out of that club as well. Because right across the country, people are also starting their working day. Great to have you with us. And you're all good. You've got some friends staying overnight who sort of, you know, some besties from yesteryear.
Oh, I gave them a curfew. I said, I'm away at 10. Don't you dare come home before 3. And they did very, very well.
Okay. Very good, Lowy. Lowy down there. Let's get into the Christchurch studio. Low.
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, listen to
him. All ready to go.
All amped up and fired up. How was your day yesterday? You were out and about, and I'm going to mention this. You took some very nice photos of a very picturesque part of the region down there.
Actually, it was my sister. She texted through after listening. They must have gone through that way later in the morning. And Coe's Ford, apparently, as Sarah will tell you, that's where Adern was meant to turn up the other day for a look at the dry riverbed, and it was flowing nicely, and I believe a farmer even took a big scoop of water out and had a drink. So yeah, well, it's pristine at this stage of the year.
That was the thing about it, Lowe, was just looking at the picture, I thought I could see how clean the water was. I thought I could see everything on the bottom of the river there. And so it looked pretty nice. Coe's Ford, beautiful part of the world. No doubt it'll pop up again in conversation over the show.
This is the thing, though, is that water quality is not by what it looks like. And this is a key misunderstanding.
But that's right. When you're up in the ranges, you don't know whether you're going to get a decent dose of Giardia, do you? You don't know what's in there.
Yeah, but I also got a Snapchat from a mate, and she said, Coe's Ford, the only thing they used to drink there at Lincoln was kegs. They used to go to Lincoln's Coast down there with kegs. So I thought it was pretty funny.
Rightio. Okay. We both did too, didn't we, Richard?
What, drink kegs or at
Coast? No, I thought Sarah's story was funny.
Come on,
Lowy, fire up.
Sarah, okay. Funny person.
7 minutes after 5, it is time now for some rural news.
Rural news with Farm Source Rewards, the most rewarding rewards program.
A new dispute over water in Hawke's Bay has erupted, with conservationists and recreational boat users opposing orchardists and irrigators in the Narurorou River catchment. Opponents to a water conservation order application on the catchment are organising a protest rally on September 19. In December 2015, 5 parties applied for a water conservation order for the Narurorou and the smaller Clive Rivers. The applicants claim the upper and lower Narurorou and the Clive River had outstanding amenity values and should be protected. They are seeking an order to preserve the upper Narurorou waters in their near natural state. This application would place restrictions on any additional water takes or discharges and dams. Orchardists believe the application would hugely impact communities, as hundreds of jobs will be lost and horticulture on the Hiritonga Plains will be decimated. The country's largest supplier of dairy genetics says it will test its artificial breeding bulls for Mycoplasma bovis to provide its farmers with greater peace of mind through the dairy mating season. Farmer-owned cooperative LIC says it will supply approximately 3/4 of the dairy industry's bull semen this spring mating period. Dr. Richard Spellman says it's understandable that farmers are concerned about the disease and any risk of transmission through bull semen. Given there is currently no evidence to suggest that the disease is widespread in New Zealand, we can be confident this disease is not present in our bulls or semen supply, he says. A re-elected national government says it will strengthen biosecurity rules, toughen penalties for stock rustling, and help exporters add value. National Party Primary Industries spokesperson Nathan Guy says these policies will help grow and protect the primary sector sustainably and support the goal of doubling the value of New Zealand's agri exports to $64 billion by 2025. Guy says National is proud to support the primary sector, which he describes as the powerhouse of New Zealand's economy that helps the country earn a living and pay for its social services. Those are your latest rural news. More in half an hour.
Rural news with Farm Source, your one source for better productivity this spring.
Richard, you said the word Narurorou quite a few times. Was that correct? How did you pronounce that?
Narurorou.
Narurorou. Where is that?
It's on the east coast, so it'll be around Gisborne, Clive, yeah.
It's good for Maori language week, in terms of roll those R's.
Bit of a tough one.
Ka pai. Thank you, Richard. Thank you. Awesome. And just a little thing that we saw just before the start of the show, there was a discussion about bull semen. There was a physical display that involved only one person. Sarah Perriam was giving a description to Richard of what it looks like a bull when he's in the mood for a bit of action, if you know what I mean.
Wow.
Which is a conversation we can have at 5:10.
Wow.
When he's about to, you know, provide the product to send overseas.
Okay.
Just the visual of it will not leave me for some time.
Okay.
You just remind the big black Angus in the middle of the paddock getting ready for it.
Okay, so Richard was just a bit concerned about how he had to repeat that word several times, which, you know, I have such maturity about the word. So I just thought I'd give him an image to try and throw him off when he was reading the news.
Dear, oh dear, try and throw him off. 5:11, there you go. It is time now to talk to Paul Sharp, who is the consultant nutritionist for Seals Winslow. They are animal nutrition specialists. Paul, tell us the importance of an increase in quantity and quality of feed to set up a calf's life early on.
For cows and also for sheep, the lactation curve starts early on. The production level is driven early on from intakes. So the more we can feed our animals early on and up to that sort of 10-week period, the better they peak. So right now we're in crucial mode to actually drive production up to set the scene for the rest of the season.
Some of the drivers, you know, they should have been done probably pre-lambing, pre-calving. What can farmers do to catch up if they've missed out?
First thing is identifying what the problem is. So have they misallocated feed, or are animals standing on it instead of eating it? Have they overlooked some of the deficiencies that might be occurring because of that? So, I mean, magnesium is a prime example. Animals don't store magnesium, so if they don't eat enough grass, they run out of magnesium. Get grass daggers and reduce their production levels. So it's identifying what the problems are for a start. Is it energy? Is it protein? Is it a mineral? Is it just outright dry matter? And then figuring out what needs to go in there to correct it.
But what about our beef farmers out there on the hill if they're not quite getting the appropriate intake?
Yeah, look, that's a really good one. Certainly for our breeding beef on the hill country, magnesium deficiencies through the spring are a real issue. We have low magnesiums in the pastures anyway because of cold winter temperatures. And if now we've got soft ground and pugging, that reduces intakes further. One of the simplest ways of getting magnesium into that diet is actually blocks. So magnesium-based lick blocks, they can be put out in the paddock and the animals can help themselves. If you've got reticulated water, magnesium sulfate through the water or some other magnesium sources, but often that's not the case in hill country. So blocks or most extreme, flying on some magnesium onto the top of the pasture.
In regards to the impacts, if we don't achieve these targets for both in beef and dairy, but what's the flow-on effect?
The early lactation period for all animals are driven genetically by intake. Once they get to that peak milk production, which is sort of 8 to 10 weeks for a cow, sort of 2 to 3 weks for our ewes, from then on, that production drives appetite for the rest of the year. So for a dairy cow, one more litre at peak milk, which is sort of 8 to 10 weeks into lactation, can produce another 200 litres through the rest of lactation. So driving that peak is obviously very critical to the total season production.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
There we go. That is Paul Sharp, who is the consultant nutritionist for Seals Winslow, the animal nutrition specialists. Did you used to rear calves and lambs, Sarah Perriam? Because I'm just thinking of acute Richard Lowe and I'm thinking of him in like little taut, tight denim shorts and sort of a check shirt, walk socks, and sort of early 70s kind of thing with a pet lamb. I can't, you know, pet lamb and calf day. Can you imagine, Lowe? There must be a picture somewhere out there of Richard Lowe at Lamb and Calf Day.
Rex at radiolive.co.nz, please.
There you go.
Send
you're becoming a natural centre to us. What was that again? Rex at radiolive.co.nz. www.hawkspay.co.nz. So lamb and calf, because we're talking, of course, they're talking about the importance of quality feed and nutrition early on in a calf's life. Did you ever have a pet calf?
We raised bobby calves as kids, and that was to teach us how to, you know, make money. But, you know, as per great parents, they always don't charge you for grazing.
Charge you for grazing?
Don't charge,
didn't charge
but,
you for
but
grazing.
It teaches you to
So you didn't really get the true picture, because you didn't have to pay, you didn't have to lease or buy the land to raise the bobby calf.
See, I don't. Hamish, you should know that Sarah's done most things.
Lowy, that's very, very, very harsh but fair coming out of the Christchurch studio this morning. I bought my first car out of just because in those days, the dairy farmers, and there were few and far between. I mean, they were as rare as hen's teeth up in the northern Manawatu. Now the whole place is taken over with it just by going and collecting colostrum, just going around and feeding these cows, getting the bobbies. They didn't want them, and did quite nicely out of it.
Lowy, what did you get your children to do in terms of pocket money back when they were growing up as children?
They did numerous things. I know Livy, she did a lot of lambs one year. I think it cost me an arm and a leg and milk powder, but exactly. She did quite well out of it.
Yeah.
I think she had 15, 20 odd pet lambs.
Yep. Okay, so the big question is here. We need that photo. Richard Lowe, if you don't supply it, we'll come and get it. We know where to find you. Richard Lowe at Lamb and Calf Day. Little tight denim shorts, check shirt. Probably had a bow tie or something. Who knows? Goodness me, the sight just...
Wouldn't it be lovely, though, if we could get people, if they would like to send in any cute photos of kids and lambs, like children together with lambs and calves.
I reckon that'd be
morning
great.
On
that'd
our
be
Facebook
great.
Page.
We'll talk a bit more about that. Remind us to do that over the course of the show. 5:17 here on Rex. This is Real Exchange Radio Live. The team is Hamish Mackay, Sarah Perriam, and Richard Lowe. Richard, of course, representing the South Island stronghold down there in our Christchurch studio, as he will be 5 till 7 Saturday and Sunday mornings. Lowe, we are going to talk the rugby. 57-0. Did you fall asleep?
No, hell no. Exciting game. Great game.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about, I had one player I thought who really stood out. One player. Well, there's one player. There's night and day between our best halfback and our second half best halfback. Aaron Smith just changes the game completely.
Yeah, absolutely. He's back on form and he's playing well. And although TJ Perenara played well for the Hurricanes, he's lost that form, and I think he's lucky to keep that position in front of Kurt Barlow at this stage.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm going to talk about one player, though, who I thought was slightly old-fashioned in the way he went about his work for the position that he ended up on in the team. But we'll talk about that more, because we're in a sport chat before 6:18 here on Rex Rural Exchange. You can text us, text Rex to 3920, and we'll also fire you back a myriad of ways to contact us here on Rural Exchange.
Radio Live Rural Exchange. Rural real estate with Bayleys, New Zealand's number one rural real estate brand.
Rural Exchange Radio Live, time to talk real estate with a great team from Bayleys. And we're heading down to the top of the South Island. We're heading into the Marlborough, and particularly the Marlborough Sounds area, where we're joined by Glenn Dick. G'day, Glenn.
G'day, guys. How you going?
Yeah, great to have you on the show. Of course, Glenn has been, he's been a top 5% agent in the country for the past 6 years. That is no mean feat. You know this game, Richard Lowe, Sarah Perriam, where the top 5% earn 95% of the coin. So, you know, we want to go to the best. We want to find out what's happening down there in the Marlborough Sounds. What's sort of hot in terms of listings and business at the moment, Glenn?
Oh, we're just sort of cracking back into it after the winter, so it always goes a bit quiet over the winter time. Everyone heads off overseas and goes skiing, so we're into listing season, like to call it, and stocking the closet with all these good listings, holiday homes and a few other lifestyle properties.
Lifestyle property, just perfect for one, like a wealthy sort of mid-north central Canterbury farmer like Arlo. You got anything for him?
You're batching the sounds,
yeah,
Lowy.
We'll get that road back open before Christmas, and it'll just be ideal. All the Canterbury farmers will come flocking up.
Has that had an effect, actually? How much have you noticed that in your day-to-day business?
The road going out probably it really knocked us around last summer. About 50% of buyers for the Sounds come out of Canterbury. Yep. So the road getting taken out definitely did slow it down. Like coming around the long way put a few people off. And and then last summer, as most of New Zealand, had a pretty rough weather-wise in terms of the sun shining. So it was a quieter season last summer. So hence the road will be open this year, and the sun will come out, and it'll be a cracking hot summer and we'll be into it. Everybody will need a place to cool off.
Now, Glenn, your patch from the sounds southward, I take it. How far south do you move?
Well, our offices here, we go right down to Kaikoura, basically. So we've got an office in Kaikoura as well. Blenheim, Picton. So we cover it all in Marlborough.
So how are those people, you know, south of Blenheim there towards, I suppose, the Clarence, the cut-off spot at the moment, how are they faring? What's the mood down that way?
The mood is pretty sober after the earthquake and they all bound together and got together. There's been some good activities going on. We had a good rugby game in Seddon not long ago, which got all the locals around. And, so they've bound together and building themselves back up again. So rebuilding a few houses, a few sheds, putting some fence lines back in. It's a pretty resilient part of the world down there.
Glenn, I think that you're the envy of most Bailey's agents in regards to how beautiful the properties are that you've got access to. My mother's in the Bay of Many Coves. And have you seen a changing demographic in regards to people heading into the Sounds area? What sort of people live in and around there? And tell us about how their access.
Most of it's all boat access, as you know, in the Bay of Many Coves and out Queen Charlotte. So it's first criteria is you need a boat. So that's always a good excuse. Everybody needs a boat. Predominantly that's holiday homes. So, you know, probably in the boat access areas it'd be, I don't know, be as low as 20% permanent people live out there. And the rest is holiday homes. So it's always quieter in the wintertime, which is a good time for boating, by the way, because there's no wind. It's always dead calm. And the fishing's good in the wintertime too. So, yeah, like the Bay of Many Coves, it's a good area, which is about 25 minutes out of Picton by boat.
We're talking to Glenn Dick from Bailey's down there in Marlborough, top 5% agent nationwide in the last 6 years. We're going to find a bit more out about you, Glenn, though, because for those that are sort of in the online and digital world right now, they will get an idea. And for our radio listeners, I need to explain. It looks like Glenn does get his suits from Working Style. It's very kind of a very Auckland look going on here, very sharp. I'm not saying, but you are a man of the land as well, because we understand through Sarah's good context that you spend a lot of your time, your downtime, mustering with your mates at Walter Peak Station. I think that sounds outstanding.
Yeah, exactly. No, if you get down there with the boys, it's always a good way to get out of the suits. We've got an auction day today. That's the reason why I've got the suit on, actually. So it's auction day starting at 12 o'clock. And but back to Walter Peak. No, get down there and have a week with the boys down there, helicopters, dogs, a few beers, get out in the hills. There's no better way for the soul, really.
Radio Live Rural Exchange. Rural real estate with Bailey's, New Zealand's number one rural real estate brand.
5:26, that was Glenn Dick, country and waterfront agent for Bailey's down there in Marlborough and the Sounds and around that part of the world. And he's in the top 5%. He knows the game. But what a great way to spend some downtime. Well, his mates on Walter Peak Station mustering. Yeah. Oh, I just think that's an awesome story.
There's a big crew of them that go and do it every year, and a few of them have been over just lately as well, helping out. So, it's a stunning place. You have to get there by boat. Actually from the back end, but, you know, Walter Peak, where a lot of tourists get to experience farm life.
Beautiful.
Pretty cool.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Richard Lowe down there in the Christchurch studio of Rural Exchange, Rex right across the country, Sarah Perryman, Hamish Mackay in Auckland. Lowey, you like a good kiwi fruit?
I don't mind a bit of kiwi fruit. It's great fruit if you are marinating a bit of venison or a bit of wild duck, a bit of soy sauce and a bit of oil for 20 minutes. It does wonders.
Not so much though sliced on your porridge or something like that.
No, eating it as a fruit's cool. Just you can eat the skin. Good for you, a bit of roughage.
Oh no, nothing like a bit of roughage, Lowe. It's an important thing, important part.
Well,
of
you're sitting in a studio with a bit of roughage.
Oh dear. I'm going to ask you, Lowe. I'm going to ask you because I came into work this morning and I wander around, and often as I do, I sort of, you know, inadvertently just walk past certain desks and sort of see what's lying around in terms of there might be a good pen or glanced, something that I can, you know, grab for myself. But there's a beautiful box of Zespri, like a Zespri box, you know, beautifully presented. And I open it up and it's empty. And I'm just wondering, you know, like, because next up on the show, we're going to be talking to Nick Curtin, who is the External Relations Manager for Zespri. We're going to be talking a bit of kiwi fruit because, you know, it's, they've had a remarkable season as they bounce back from all sorts of problems in that industry. But the box was empty, Lowy.
Someone has received a gift and not shared it with the team.
Yeah, and you know the rules around that, don't you, Lowy? In terms of, like,
sure,
you know,
I tried to set the example the other week, and you know, so what about muffins? Did she heat up those stale muffins?
There's always talks of muffin. There's always talks of Scott. But a whole lot of people that don't make any contribution to our show probably partook in these kiwi fruit. Anyway, after the break, we're going to talk to Nick Curtin. We're going to talk about the one of the rock stars of the primary sector. That is a kiwi fruit. That's coming up after the break here on Rex
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Right, time to talk kiwi fruit on the show right now here on Rural Exchange. Joining us, Nick Curtin, External Relations Manager for Zespri. Of course, 500 grower shareholders involved in Zespri. 20 years old this year, Zespri. And gee, there's been some highs and lows along the way. We've seen the PSA and now a bounce back. Nick, look, the PSA devastated the industry a few seasons back, but things in the kiwi fruit sector bouncing back nicely.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, just a few weeks ago, we had our Zespri AGM where we reported on the last financial year. And I mean, it's generally pretty positive news. So we had a record crop through last year. We had the highest ever returns to growers. And so if you're a gold grower, what that means is you're earning on average around $100,000 per hectare. And if you're a green grower, you're earning around $53,000 per hectare. So it's a pretty positive environment there, especially as we look forward into the growth coming into the future. So we're on $2.2 billion worth of global revenue this year. We're looking to increase that to $4.5 billion of global revenue by 2025.
What's an average sort of property have, Nick, when you're talking $100,000 a hectare? What sort of size are we talking here for an average producer of a gold kiwi fruit?
So it's all in the averages, obviously. So so the story differs across the industry, but on average, you're looking at about 4 hectares per grower.
Hmm. Yep.
What sort of worth is kiwi fruit now to our economy? A bit of a rock star.
Yeah, well, so as I said, $2.2 billion worth of global revenue. Now, the New Zealand export side of that is $1.9 billion. And I just guess, for context, about 2 years ago, those figures were about $1.6 billion and $1.3 billion, respectively. So it is growing, and we're looking to see that growth continue. And I think the important thing there is it's out in the regions. You know, it's in the Bay of Plenty. It's round east into Gisborne and the Hawke's Bay. It's up in Northland. It's in Waikato and Nelson. So you're getting a bit of a diverse growth into those regions that actually need those jobs and that export income.
1.6 to 2.2, up to 4.5 billion, I think you said, Nick. So what are the drivers that need to make that happen?
Yeah, so a lot of that growth is driven off our new gold variety, which helped us through that PSA recovery. Now, the markets are really responding to that. It grows really well here, and we're seeing, particularly in, you know, Japan, China, but also actually in North America, which is a market we're really looking to invest in and to grow kind of as our fourth volume market. So we're seeing a really positive response there. We're seeing things like the Korea Free Trade Agreement being really positive in terms of being able to recapture some of our market share there. We were losing to our competitors. And it's just about getting the fundamentals right, making sure we grow supply but have that demand sort of triggered well ahead of it coming through.
What about the past? Learnings from a few years back where things seemed to be going okay, PSA hit. Tell us about some of those learnings and how the industry has improved.
The obvious one, I think, is biosecurity. And biosecurity has always been a huge focus for the industry, but I think increasingly so now. And we all saw the impact of what happened with PSA. So I think there's a couple of things there. And one is that it's not just about the government running the biosecurity system, putting those settings in place. It's actually about the industry working with the government closely to make sure that we can, to the extent possible, keep out those threats. But if they do come in, that we know how to manage them, can manage them well. And I think the second thing is just a key learning, I think, from PSA was just how the industry responded, how it coordinated, collectivised, came together, worked with the government and sort of pulled our way through that.
At 20 years old, the Zespri brand, one of the wonderful ideas of Brian Richards, who we've had on the show last week. Tell us about, you know, the amount you've invested in regards to marketing and how it's a long-term project at building a brand.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're spending around $150 million each year in building that brand awareness, that market development offshore, and really just keeping our brand and our product front of mind for consumers. So when they walk into that supermarket in the China market and Europe market, they're getting our product over those other varieties. And now another key part of that actually is that since we're a seasonal product, we're sort of leaving the markets for 3 to 4 months of the year. And so when you've got that investment in there, you need to make sure you're maximising it. So what we've got is a Northern Hemisphere supply program, and that's going to be growing rapidly over the coming years. So that's about us sourcing fruit in the off-season to make sure that Zespri brand stays on the shelf 12 months of the year.
Nick, I've got a question in regard to, you've had the AGM, and there's, what, 500 odd grower shareholders involved in Zespri. Talk to me, tell me, and there's a lot of pressure on the land in different areas, but in terms of the feel of the Zespri community, the people, then when they come to the AGM now on the back of a record year, as opposed to when things were pretty gloomy, and it's not that long ago.
No, it's not long ago, and you know, the effects are still being felt in some part of the industry. Actually, one of the interesting things that happened at the AGM is we announced in March there'll be a special general meeting, and the purpose of that is to put a resolution forward to shareholders, which would be putting in place some steps to align shareholding with production. So at the moment, to be a Zespri shareholder, you need to be a kiwi fruit grower to purchase them, but you don't necessarily need to be a shareholder to be a kiwi fruit grower. And we think actually aligning those two sets of those two groups is going to be quite valuable for the industry going forward.
Okay. Nick, just for our wider audience, Zespri's based out of where? I mean, where's sort of HQ?
Yes, HQ's in Mount Maunganui. You've got probably 85, 90% of our kiwi fruit grown in the Bay of Plenty. But you also have Northland, you have Gisborne, you have Hawke's Bay, Waikato, down in Nelson, a little bit in Whanganui. So the regional growth's actually kind of spreading and diversifying, especially with the gold kiwi fruit. We're seeing that's starting to take off in regions that perhaps the green kiwi fruit wouldn't otherwise do.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Thanks very much there to Nick Curtin, External Relations Man. Oh, hold on a minute. Just wandering into the studio, back into the studio. Oh, scones. Unbelievable. Richard Lowe, you might wish that you were back operating out of the Auckland studio. The cheese scones have just arrived. Outstanding, Sarah Perriam. Outstanding. That makes up for the kiwi fruit that I understand.
They're the ones she got from the cafe on Friday, aren't they?
No, actually they're not, Lowy, because my friends woke me up so early this morning, I decided, why not just whip out a wee batch before I pop in?
Yeah,
see what she's doing. It's a sort of an advertising campaign Sarah's running here. Look, I'm the sort of woman that can get up first thing in the morning, 3 o'clock, make a batch of scones for the husband before he goes down to the dairy shed.
Oh, just outstanding. I'm impressed.
You know
impressed.
Me too well,
I'm impressed.
Lowy.
Righto, guys, here we go. One Taupo winner takes home $30 million in the lotto last night. Okay, so that was purchased at the Richmond Soubrette in Taupo. It's the fourth highest prize in Lotto's 30-year history. Okay, here's the question. I'm going to get you to answer it first, Sarah, then you can answer it, Lowy. You've just won 30 mil. You're allowed to blow $1 million, but you have to blow it straight away, 1 million. What's your first 1 million go on? And it's just you blow it. Absolutely spend it. Sarah Perriam, what would you spend $1 million on?
Get on the first plane from Auckland with 10 of my best mates straight to Nashville and get Miranda Lambert at Eric Church and have a private party.
Holy mackerel. First class up there.
Oh, business
just
class.
Lots,
for
lots
10.
Of bubbles, you know, lots of anything that they want on the plane, and I mean anything. Would you probably spend more than $1 million and perhaps just borrow somebody's jet, Learjet, private jet? That'd be the way to. Oh. Imagine that.
Yeah.
There's a couple that float out at the airport there. Lowy, what would you do with $1 million? Clean up. You'd clean up the rivers, wouldn't you? You'd donate it.
No.
not on your life. What would you do?
No, you'd just sit back and enjoy it, I reckon. you wouldn't, you know, the 30 mil, even if you put it in the poor old bank at the lowly rate of interest they give you at the moment, it'd be quite a good little earner, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
you just keep on.
So what would you do? You just have like a computer screen and you just deposit it and you just have that ticking over? The interest every 5 minutes or something, the increased interest, you just watch it tick over?
And you do those things. You can't, you know, because time and work and everything doesn't allow you. You just cruise off and do a few, you know, few trips and enjoy life.
Yeah, you would. 30 mil to one of our winners in Taupo. That's 30 mil last night. Jeez.
That's that person with a lot of friends and a lot of whanau out there.
Yeah, it's quite.
They're all coming out of the woodwork.
Oh, yeah, I imagine it. It would come with all sorts of trials and tribulations. After the break, we're going to talk a bit of sport heading into the top of the hour. We'd also love to hear from you. You can talk sport, you can talk kiwi fruit. You might be somebody who's doing nicely out of that now, but let's face it, basically you are basically in that kiwi fruit industry. We have got orchardists who are pretty much, you know, the money that's coming in now, it's damage control from some of the really tough years that happened. We're well aware of that. Text us to Rex3920 and you'll get a myriad of ways to contact us back. You can call us. We'd love to take your talk back calls this morning here on Rex 0800 844 747. It could be something as simple as what you are up to on the land today. Now, remember, everybody in the city and the towns across the country here, not everybody, but a fair percentage spent their school holidays with their family, friends, with their family, you know, the extended family. I had cousins of mine who I adored who lived in Herne Bay in Auckland. And I used to think the poor things got shoveled down to us on the farm. They told me years later how much they just loved it. And they're all girls. They loved it. They particularly loved it when the shearers came. They used to spend a lot of time in the wool shed, especially when they're sort of towards their late teens. I'm not sure why. Muscular young shearers, sweaty, working hard. I mean, it seemed to appeal to them. I'm not quite sure what that was, Sarah Perriam.
No, I'm not really sort of, that way inclined. But the shearers used to be my babysitters back in the day on the farm. When Mum and Dad used to go away mustering, they used to look after me. Taught me lots of bad tricks, like putting tomato sauce on my eggs.
Tomato sauce on eggs.
How to wipe my face with the back of my hand. Like, you know, bad habits.
Bad habits. But, you know, none of them were ever going to kill you, were they?
No.
Now, I mean, tomato sauce on eggs is not going to harm you forever and a day. Quarter to six here. That's 5:45 here. Sunday, the 17th of September, 2017. This means that this time next week we'll have a new government. We'll have an idea, although we could have sort of like a 1996 2 weeks to decide what Winston wants to do. Who knows? Who knows what's going to come up? But of course, decision 17, there'll be huge coverage across 3 Radio Live and News Hub online, on the telly, on the radio, particularly on the night. There'll be the Radio Live election special with Sainzo. Chris Trotter will be along with him, and Mitch Harris will be in there as well. It's the Radio Live election special, 7 till midnight. And, of course, 3's coverage will have Duncan Garner, Patrick Gower, Paddy Gower, who was in with us yesterday, and Lisa Owen will be fronting that as well. Decision 2017. Can't believe it's less than a week away, but I don't know. Has the election campaign ruled your life? What have you made of it? What's your thoughts heading into it? Give us a call, 0800 844 747, or text us here to Rex on 3920. When we come back, we'll talk a bit of sport.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Oh, that's what sport's all about, isn't it? Fostering peace and love. Let sport unite us all. 1974 was the year. Lo, you remember that well, don't you?
Yeah, I can remember the old, they weren't old, they're brand new in their day, the Kingswood with the emblem on the door driving around.
Oh, beautiful days. Christchurch Commonwealth Games. It all feels, I think that, you know, look, obviously, yeah, sure. And I don't mean to be disrespectful at all, but there was the human tragedy of the Christchurch earthquakes. But there was also, I guess, the kind of the landscape, something that was as precious as, you know, I know it's sort of probably sat out there for years and years and years, but the memory of 1974, the Commonwealth Games in Christchurch, I mean, Dick Taylor winning one of the many amazing results out there, sort of now sort of gone. You know, I don't even know what stands out there where the old stadium was, Lowy. I'm not even sure. I mean, I thought, you know, completely destroyed, obviously. But anyway, I digress a little bit because I just wanted to have that song. That was Steve Allen, or his name is actually Allen Stevenson, Steve Allen, and that was this Commonwealth Games theme song from 1974. Feels like yesterday. I was in a caravan at Mount Maunganui, Amanu Beach, watching. It was on black and white TV. Colour TV had come in here, but still had a black and white in those days. Anyway, 57-0 last night, Lowy. Give us a wrap on that. Give us a wrap on that. But first of all,
the Sports Wrap with AFCO New Zealand Limited. Kiwi to the bone.
To the bone. AFCO. Love it. Rightio, Lowy. 57-0. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. Are the All Blacks outstanding or were the box just awful?
Most of them were outstanding, and it just proves one thing to me. Shut up and do the work. Both the when you think of what Kane Hames was going on about at a media conference, I hope he's learnt from that. And the Springbok coach also, what was the headline? Something about he had the blueprint how to beat the All Blacks. He forgot to bring it with him, I think.
Yeah, no, they clearly didn't look at that. But, I mean, in the early in the game, it's like the box put on enough pressure and look like they can create opportunities. But some of those sort of intercepts and lightweight turnovers were just unbelievable, really. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a far cry from some of the great battles that we've seen between these two teams. The old foe kind of doesn't feel like that anymore, does it?
Yeah, they talked themselves up big time as if they were here to do a job and they had the self-belief, but they couldn't put it on the pitch, so to speak. And I just think the ferocity that the All Blacks took it to them. You know, Liam Squire, every time he returned the ball from the kickoff, he got past at least, I think the first time he did it, he got past a couple of tackles and then went on 10-odd metres out. So, you know, they carried the ball very, very well, and they're very precise with their angles, their lines they ran, and then their offloads.
Yep. Okay, we're going to talk more on the rugby, more on that test match last night over there. We're going to talk about a couple of the standout players. We'll talk about a rugby league. We'll talk some Heartland as well. We'll also mention Manawa 2 thumping Waikato in an incredibly embarrassing moment for a former Waikato front rower. It would have been two there was with that pushover scrum from Manawa 2. We're going to talk more on that, but we're going to go to the Lions. We're going to talk to Jeff is calling out of Motueka. Jeff wants to talk the elections, the campaign. Good morning, Jeff.
Oh, good morning. Hey, really like your show.
Oh, thanks, Chief.
I normally listen to the farming show on Radio Sport from 5, yep. But you guys have given me something to listen to on the weekends.
Well, nice to have an alternative, and they're good guys, and they work hard too, and they have the interest of the land at heart too, like we do. So good to be talking to you, Jeff. Excellent.
Yeah. No, look, it's business as usual for me. I start at 6 and finish at 5 at a timber laminating plant, and all these politicians promising the earth. I wish I had all that money.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't
exactly.
It? Winston's certainly going up in terms of his dollars that are being calculated, you know, over and above Labor's in terms of wishes, aren't they, Jeff?
Oh, yeah. I just hope a lot of people in New Zealand are going to be sensible about it.
Yeah, it's a bit scary. Who even knows what's going to happen? But we'll find out on Sunday. Hopefully you're going to be listening next Sunday too, Jeff.
Yeah, I will be. Yeah, and I'm still undecided. But anyway, it's pretty much business as usual down here.
Yeah, and I suspect, you know what, Jeff, the sun will come up or the rain will come down Sunday morning, and we'll know possibly know the result of the election in a week's time. But it'll be business as usual then too, probably.
Yeah,
let's all hope so.
Hey, look, you guys are doing a great job. I really like the way you present it. And, I've been in farming and horticulture for 35 years. I'm in the timber business now, but it's really good. Good on you guys.
Thank you, Jeff. Great to chat to you, Jeff. And that's Jeff calling out of Motueka. We've got a couple of texts in here to love the show, guys. Best way to wake up to a great show. And also Patsy, regards from Patsy, who says, I'm 86 and really enjoy the show.
Aww.
Have learned so much. Grew up in London, didn't see a cow until I was 14, but reckon she could now get a job on Lowy's farm. Patsy, at 86, you might be a bit active and a bit sort of driven for Lowy, I reckon, probably, because he's gentleman, farmer.
Can I ask Patsy for some advice, if she could text back in?
Oh, okay,
here
we go.
Best scone recipe.
Best scone recipe, Patsy. There you go. Patsy, if you could text back in for Sarah your best scone recipe. Rightio, getting back to sport. Yesterday afternoon, I watched Manawatu thump Waikato in the Mitre 10 Cup. But one of the moments, here we go, Kane Hames was rubbish. There's a text that's just come in. Kane Hames was rubbish. Three penalties and three errors. There you go. Dragged pretty early too, wasn't he, Lowy?
Yeah, he was. And I had my doubts about, because he hasn't performed week in, week out. He was given an opportunity once before, and he came off the bench and did reasonably well. But yeah, he's got a fair cupboard of work-ons to do.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Rightio. So just on that Manawatu game, alone, about 15 minutes to go, Waikato had been ahead 10-3. Manawatu, then a Manawatu scrum, a 5-metre pushover. An old-fashioned pushover try. Harrison Brewer, son of Mike Brewer, playing at 8 for Manawatu, coming off the bench. Scores, I mean, you just don't see that. I mean, that must pull very much, you know, deeply affect you to see that. To see the power of that. I mean, you guys used to do it in your day, but hell, you don't see it very often now.
The other team I've seen do it is the Bay of Plenty team.
Oh, right. Okay.
Against Taranaki the other week. They did very well.
Yep.
You know, it is possible to do it, but you have to be able to scrummage. You have to be able to have control, and I think it's great. It's one way, if you've got dominance, to really deflate the opposition. Oh.
The story here is, if you haven't got a front row, you haven't got a rugby team. It all begins and ends in the rugby team, in the front row. You know, whether it was the Palmerston North Boys High School first 15 of 1983 who had a magnificent front row, or whether it was Arlo's, you know, the teams he's played in over the, you know, how many, Marlborough back in the day, in the early days, Lowy, correct? Is that where you made your debut? Or did you play for Canterbury before that, didn't you, as a youngster,
as a youngster.
Yeah, as a youngster.
In those days, there were front row forwards in the Canterbury team like Bill Bush and John Ashworth and Barry Thompson. So they were sort of mid-30s, I was late teens.
Yeah, so you kind of just sort of learn by just getting in there amongst it, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Well, as you go.
I sort of came through in a time, well, not that I was any good, I was bloody hopeless to be fair, but you have to have your wits against you when you had Graham Hurunui and Terry Clare and Huya Gordon and different people sort of floating around. Anyway, there you go.
And I see here Tasman just beat Otago.
Oh, Otago got beat. We won't talk about Otago. Poor old Otago. Sorry about that, Sarah. Sarah Perium. Heartland Rugby, Lowy. You wanted to mention some Heartland Rugby
Bit of Heartland. But before we start on the Heartland, the New Zealand area schools sponsored by the Barbars got a phone call from one Ron Williams, the president, the other day. They're playing in playing a few games, and a couple of games down here. They play the North Canterbury schools and then country schools. And when you think of area schools, you know, local ones around this province are the Hurunui and Cheviot.
Yep.
I see there's kids from Roxburgh, right across the country, all these area schools. So it's, you know, a pathway. But talking about a pathway in Heartland, a few good games. Thames Valley got up over Buller. South Canterbury got the Butcher Boys from Whanganui.
That's West an upset Coast, too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. West Coast upset Harawhanua Kapiti 24-18. North Otago, your old mate, had a win down there against King Country, Narrow.
That's our Carter's Tires, man.
Yep. Mid Canterbury up, thrashed Piriwipu's team 60-24. And the Battle of the Coast, Poverty Bay got up over East Coast. So some good scores there.
There you go. The Heartland Rugby Wrap from Richard Lowe here. Coming up to the top of the hour now, 6 o'clock, and news and sport from News Hub next hour. Just looking at my...
Can I ask Lowy just a quick question?
Very quick, Sarah.
Maori Language Week, Lowy.
Is that Maori Language Week as well as Maori
Māori
Language?
Māori, the introduction of the Māori anthem would have been about your time, was it, Lowy?
No, that I'd well and truly hung up the boots by then.
And now he's out of retirement on Rex.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Rural Exchange, Rex Radio Live. Hamish Mackay, Sarah Perium, Richard Lowe, your team right across the country. Cape Reinga to the Bluff, great to have you with us every Saturday and Sunday morning between 5 and 7. You can text us on Rex, text Rex to 3920, and we'll flick you a myriad of ways to contact us back. 0800 844 747 is the number to call us on. Let's quickly knock over the poll. We went for the poll. Would you get out there? Take us through that, Sarah, quickly, with the poll. Result of the
on
poll.
On Facebook, believe it or not, it's 49% yes, 51% no.
What was the poll? What was the poll? What was the poll?
The question asked, would you take to the streets and protest if the trifecta of taxes, as Dairy NZ CEO Tim Mackle sort of coined it, comes into law after the election?
So if there is a Labor government, that's what we're saying, because they're the ones that they're proposing,
comes
right?
Comes into law, yeah. Yeah. Yep. So would you, in terms of sort of feeling the pulse of the nation and see where they're
at. So they're apathetic, 50-50. 50-50 would protest. And the protest we were sort of suggesting is tractors on bridges, keys into the river, that kind of stuff. Not going to happen, okay? Interesting to hear. 6:24 here on Rex Rule Exchange. Look, we're going to hear from the Minister of Primary Industries and the opposition spokesman.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Nathan Guy, Primary Industries Minister, and Damien O'Connor, of course, spokesman for the opposition. We take their questions from the Rural Exchange team, farmers, and give us the reason they should get the rural vote this election. First of all, we go to Nathan Guy before heading to Damien. Nathan, how's it been going on the campaign trail?
It's feeling pretty good. I've been all over New Zealand. The regions and provinces are in really good heart. Certainly, there's a hell of a lot of support out there for National. They're worried about all these extra taxes. And in terms of my patch, I'm working my butt off here in Ōtaki to hold the seat, and I'm pretty confident I'll do that.
Nathan, why should our rural community vote National?
Oh, they'll vote National this time with a huge amount of support, in my belief, because they're really worried about taxes from the other side, the water tax, the emissions trading tax, potentially the capital gains tax, although I see they're starting to soften their stance on that, but that's certainly coming down the pipeline at our farmers. And on the other side of the equation, the National Party is proposing to partner and back our primary sector. A fantastic announcement made a couple of days ago with Landcorp, allowing young farming families to lease to buy over 5 to 10 years. Which will be really exciting, we believe, for about 100 farming families. They'll do a better job than Landcorp will, our belief. Also, strengthening up biosecurity. We want to toughen up the rules at the border and modernise the Act. We've also got the Future Farming Fund, which we're turbocharging. Currently, we've got Sustainable Farming Fund. We want to rename that, and that's a focus on agri-technology for our farmers to pick up and adapt. We know there are some challenges out there in the environmental space, and importantly, we want to help provide the technology for our farmers to adjust.
Nathan, could you provide some more detail, please, around your announcement yesterday and how that would work?
Landcorp have got about 135 farms, about 80 or so, we believe, could be available over time to young farming families. They'll need to have a proven track record of farming in New Zealand. They'll need to farm the land for 5 to 10 years. That'll be a lease under a commercial arrangement. We'll set up a panel of people that are well-known in the agriculture industry to screen the applicants and make the final decisions. And it's a really exciting policy. It's going to allow young farming families to get on the land and to farm ownership, and we know that that's pretty challenging right now.
Effectively, equity partnership with the Crown.
Lease to buy over 5 to 10 years, and then ownership. So the Crown steps out, and we need to, of course, be mindful of the obligations that we have with iwi, and that's already happening because Landcorp have been selling non-strategic farms over a long period of time, and that relationship with iwi works pretty well. And there's quite a few hundred Landcorp farmers that might be a bit concerned about their future. And what I want to say to them is, well, some of you might want to apply through the application process. Others of you should take some comfort that these farms will still need to have staff on them. So I see it as a win-win all around.
You mentioned your home turf. How's things going there? And what is the major issue facing you there?
On my home patch, which is pretty much a commuting electorate into the capital city, Wellington, it's roading. We've invested $630 million on the Kapiti Expressway. and we're going to continue to build a decent road from Levin to Wellington. And actually, that has a lot of benefits for our primary sector and just the average commuter or motorist as well, because right now we are the worst choke point in the lower North Island, and you can't get produce down to the port, you can't get on the ferry on time, you struggle to get a doctor's appointment, and it's really challenging. So the investment that the national government have made over the last 5 or 6 years has been certainly welcomed in my patch.
Joined on the campaign trail, Damien O'Connor, primary industry spokesman for Labor, coming in from Ross. How is the general feeling on the campaign trail for you, Damien?
It's pretty positive, I have to say. And we had just down here yesterday, a huge crowd turned out in Greymouth, and it's been, really, really good, I have to say. We're not taking anything for granted, but the fact that we've had, obviously a positive shift in our direction is really, it's a nice way to be campaigning, I have to say.
As far as our rural community is concerned, why should they vote for Labor?
Because we're going to offer the best security for rural people into the future, as we always have done. Make the changes necessary across the agribusiness sector. Give security for rural schools and hospitals, which we built when this government really has ignored since. We put a lot of rural hospitals in place out around, and we're going to double the funding for rural roading, which is really important. Bring back in rural proofing, which is along with the Minister of Rural Affairs. All of those things are going to offer more security for rural communities.
Now, Damien, you've got a fairly drawn-out patch over there on the west coast up into the Nelson-Tasman region. What are the main concerns for your people?
I guess housing, not so much on the west coast, although the quality of the housing down here is pretty shite. That is the rental housing that has been built, a number of years ago. We've had some attempts to upgrade and some insulation, but we need to boost that. Up the top end of the electorate, there's actually just a shortage of houses, full stop, like many places in the country. So we've got to get more affordable ones built. We've got quite a few people have been migrating into Tasman, lots of money building huge big houses, but we're really short of affordable housing. But you come back to that and then jobs. People want secure jobs. We've got at the top around horticulture, we've got a lot of sunshine wages, people in seasonal work, kind of minimum wages, they're getting by, but then when, the seasons change or the erratic nature, costs are going up, they just don't have enough income. And that's the situation with a growing number of people on the West Coast. We've had a real hit with the mining industry. And so people some have transitioned into the tourism industry, but a lot of people have left. But those industries, the tourism and other service industries, don't pay good money, and people need good money to have a good life.
Talking about good money and income, Damien, Jacinda says that there's no new taxes in this first term. Where are you going to get the money from?
Well, it's all there. In fact, it's, the national government say they're going to give tax cuts, and we say we're not. And so we're going to reprioritise. That's about $8 billion that we're going to spend that money into areas like health, where there's $2 billion of underfunding, where we've got to put more into education. We're going to start with first year's free tertiary educational training for young people when they leave school. These are the things that need the money, not tax cuts to people at the top like you and Richard and me. We don't need tax cuts. We need more money for people who need the assistance.
Do you know what, though, on that, as a maiden ewe, as Richard calls me, there's no incentive in this election for not having children, which is not that's actually helping against greenhouse gas emissions. Working for families is subsidising breeding.
You might put it that way. Actually, there's not enough New Zealanders breeding, as you put it, to actually fill the jobs. And if you took away the 200,000 temporary work permits that were available in New Zealand last year, there are not enough New Zealanders to fill the jobs. In fact, there's an argument saying that, we need a population growth from New Zealanders having more children. And that's probably a more secure way. There are many other countries around the world struck with a real problem that they don't have enough children coming on. So I'm not saying everyone should rush out there and have more kids. I've done my bit by having five. I'm proud of it. But the fact is, You know, we need young New Zealanders into the future to look after us when we're in. And one day, Sarah, you'll be old too, and you'll realise that.
It's not too far
Damon,
away.
Damon, we better leave it there. You've upset Sarah. You're five in front of her, and she's got a bit of work to do.
Damon, you must have kept Jacinda busy. She over there on the West Coast, she must have got a bit held up and not turning up to Coes Ford yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know what happened over there. We had everything slick. It's always slick on the West Coast. I can't. Don't ask me to apologise for Cantabrians or Aucklanders. You know, they're different people.
Agreed.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
6:35, 25 minutes away from 7 here on Radio Live Rural Exchange. Rex, let's get to the lines. G'day, Ian. Good morning, Ian.
Yeah, g'day. G'day. Just first-time caller.
Long-time listener.
Yes.
Where are you calling from, Ian?
Oh, Cooney.
Cooney? Yep, what would you like to talk about, Ian?
Well, just raising a few issues on the legalising of cannabis and what that could do for the country.
Sure.
Yep.
Your thoughts?
And then at the same time, I'm thinking about Labor, how they're trying to beneficiaries. With the free washing machines.
Okay.
Ian, have you been to bed yet?
Yeah, Ian, grab some sleep. Free washing machines. I haven't heard that one, but it's a damn good policy. Free washing machines for all beneficiaries. Ian out of Oakerny this morning, 6:36 here on Rex Radio Live. Still to come this hour, we're going to talk to Farm Environment Auditor Megan Hands is coming up on the show. We'll also talk to Richard Green, our weatherman, and also the protest that's happening in Morrinsville. We'll hopefully get to Lloyd Downing, one of the organisers of that, before 7 o'clock here on Rex.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Megan Hands joins us now, Farm Environment Auditor Megan. I just want to say we just had a caller, Ian, from Owakuni, who said that one of Labor's policies is going to be free washing machines for all beneficiaries. I mean, I'm not sure what Ian's really on, actually, to come up with that. Have you heard of that policy?
No, I haven't heard that one, but you never know, you know. It seems anything goes this election, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you had a bit of a situation this week with a place called Coes Ford and a no-show.
Yeah, I whipped down there to see Jacinda. I heard she was coming down, so we whipped down there to have a bit of a yarn and took a local farmer who wanted to ask her a few questions. She didn't show, unfortunately, but David, the local farmer, had a few things to say, and that's all gone on Facebook, and it looks like it was... He's been pretty well appreciated for being able to get his message out there.
Oh, thanks very much to the wonderful News Hub political journalist Lloyd Burr, who was standing on site with you as well to conduct that interview for us on Facebook Live, which is, it's like nearly 60,000 views. Even Paddy Gower had it on his Facebook feed. So
yeah, something like that. So it's been going pretty nuts. I've seen it shared quite a few times and you know, props to David, the local farmer, who spoke very, very well.
So can you just speak us through why Coes Ford is of significance?
Yes, so Coes Ford's quite significant because it's a local swimming spot. It's been a popular swimming spot for people from Christchurch for a long time. Coes Ford's part of the Selwyn River, and it has had some quite significant water quality issues, and there's no disputing that. A lot of the water quality issues there, though, are around flow. So there's been quite a lot of groundwater abstraction from the upper plains, which has lowered the flows of the Selwyn River. So, of course, when you've got less water in there and more pollutants going in there, your water quality tends to get not so flat. We've had 3 years of drought, so it's been looking in a pretty bad way in the last few years. However, there's been some work going on for about 10 years around trying to improve that. And Central Plains Water Irrigation Scheme is a big part of that too.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, it wouldn't have done Jacinda much good turning up when it was in full flood.
Yeah, no, so it was in full flow. It wasn't flooding, as they said, but it was in full flow. The river's actually looking really good. And we've had some of those big rainfalls in the last month or so, which have sort of pushed quite a lot of the sediment through. And the river's flowing really well. It's looking good.
Megan, another topic, just further down the island a little bit, the aquifer recharge pilot project in Hines. Tell us about that and how it's working.
Yeah, so the first official report came out from ECAN just last week or the week before about the Managed Aquifer Recharge project down in Hines there. So what Managed Aquifer Recharge is essentially, they've essentially dug a big hole in the ground. And what they've done with that is so they're redirecting water from the irrigation scheme, which comes from the river, down back into the ground to sort of raise the groundwater levels and also to reduce the nitrogen concentrations within the groundwater there. So they've released a report that said they've achieved two of the three goals that they had. One of them, of course, being raising groundwater levels where they'd been a bit low, and also the reduction of the nitrate concentration. So I think they've dropped from about, I don't have the figures in front of me, but I think they've dropped from about sort of 4 milligrams per litre to down to about 2, which is what they're aiming for. So that's looking really positive. It's a technique they use a bit in the States. So part of a solutions package to get that water quality up and going again in Hines.
You've been a busy girl this week, also heading along to Lincoln. Dairy NZ's greenhouse gas emissions, they're on the road. Can you tell us what you learnt at that?
Yeah, so Dairy NZ are running some workshops all around the country on the Dairy Action Plan for Climate Change. So essentially what they're doing is they're running some workshops talking about our greenhouse gas reduction targets, what the dairy industry has already committed to and what New Zealand's already committed to with that 30% reduction in greenhouse gases through the Paris Agreement. So about 50% of our greenhouse gas emissions profile in New Zealand comes from agriculture. So we've got a big part to play. Now, so what they're doing is they're having workshops talking about what those commitments are and what we can do as an industry to make improvements. So that was really good. They're talking about new technologies, talking about vaccines, talking about whether there's ways that we can use genetics or anything like that, but also just some of the farm systems that we can put in place on farm that will reduce our greenhouse gas losses. So some of the things that we're already doing for nitrogen leaching are actually going to work for greenhouse gas reductions too, which is really exciting.
Megan, listening to all this, if I didn't have background knowledge on it, I'd believe that, you know, the Greens have got quite a lot of similarities in regards to what's going on already on farm, as opposed to Labor's, the campaign National have put out that Labor aren't aware of what we're even doing. Paddy Gow suggested yesterday Nats and Greens might get into bed. Well, I mean, is that a possibility?
I think it would be a fantastic outcome for New Zealand. I've actually long thought that it would be a fantastic way to go about doing things. The Greens do, particularly under James Shaw, have got some really good similarities with National and sort of the blue-green movement around being sensible with the economy at the same time as reducing our environmental impact. So I think it would be great for New Zealand, and I think it really is something the Green Party should consider.
Right, now, Megan, thank you very much for joining us. Always great insight. That is Megan Hans, our Farm Environment Auditor.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Talking weather in a moment, but great to have Megan Hans on the show. And Megan will be with you later this week, Sarah.
Yeah, News Hub are doing a fantastic thing. We're the Facebook Live, and they're bringing in people onto our Facebook set from 10 a.m. on Thursday. Megan will be joining me on the chairs, and we want your Q&A on anything to do with water and the environment, any questions you've got. She's got a huge background in science and the space. So, yeah, great opportunity to get some questions answered pre-election.
Great. Okay, righty-ho, we're going to take a call now before we get too far down the track towards 7 o'clock and... it's Jason out of Tai Happy. Hello, Jason. Wants to talk Winston Peters.
G'day, mate. Yeah, I'm just a bit outraged at Winston Peters' policies. I think it's very, not kosher. And, you know, people, you know, if they want to immigrate, then they can, you know. Like that. I think it's just one of those things that if they are in, you know, in need to immigrate, then what's the problem?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, fair call. Jason, are you not happy? Anything else about Winston? You don't, I mean, he's likely to have a decent shot next week, though.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about Winston. He likes to have a good cigarette, but there's one thing that's really grinding my gears is the washing machines that we are delivering to the people on the beneficiaries, and they are getting installed for free with the boxes taken away.
Yeah.
Oh, so this is an actual thing?
Yeah, it's an actual thing.
Wow.
There you go. Delivered for free and the boxes taken away. Thank you for that call, Jason out of Tai Happy. The voice of reason this morning, was he?
Radio Live Rural Exchange weather with Novus. Chip on your windscreen. Novus can come to your farm.
Well, talk about four seasons in one day. Up and down old weather patterns, hasn't it been, Richard Green?
Yeah, morning, Hamish. And can Winston do something about that, do you think?
Well, in Winston's mind, there's not much he couldn't achieve.
Well said. But yeah, it is. We're all over the shop at the moment. Today, another example around the country. We've got a bit of this, a bit of that. Starts us okay in the north. But then tonight looks like another rain band pushing through over parts of the North Island and the South Island today. It's a bit mishmash as well. In fact, I'd say the North Island wins today, weather-wise. If you want the drier stuff overall, the South certainly having pretty damp stuff. And not cold, well, not yet. That'll push into the South probably tomorrow and across Tuesday. So, look, the old theme pattern continues. People saying, gosh, is it wetter than normal? The odd thing here, Hamish, is that actually the rain gauge is inside the last month or so. Not hugely so, but it's just that I think the showers come and go a lot, and it seems that we're seeing a lot more rain than we should do or normally do.
Water tables remaining high for most, but drying winds in the east, they're starting to push through?
Yeah, they are, and we've seen that all, well, the last few days in eastern areas and places like Gisborne, Hawke's Bay, rural areas seeing the thermometer around 23, 24 degrees with that drying nor'wester. Canterbury and Marlborough as well, seeing that drying wind push through. But a bit of a change as I mentioned there, over the next couple of days, we should see some moisture pushing through as that wind direction swings round and colder temperatures coming with that too.
Richard, a bit of crystal ball gazing here. This time next week, will there be a bit of calm after the volatile storm from the night before?
Yeah, well, that's right. And it looks like, weather-wise, for polling day itself, it's looking fairly settled again for eastern parts, but I wouldn't hold my hang my hat on that because we're back and forth so quickly, even over a 24-hour period. At the moment, it looks okay in the north and east. But as I say, as we get closer to the day, perhaps it's symbolic of the election itself. It could be volatile.
Okay, so as we know, weather does have an impact on voter turnout and certainly always seems to lean towards the right if the weather is not good.
Yeah,
interesting.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? And what was the percentage of something like 85% of the last election of voters over 60, age 60 and over, 85% of those ones went out and voted. That's great. A little bit different, though, if you're 21, it was something like 28%.
Yeah,
so, I know.
Cool.
We'll keep an eye on the skies.
We will. Cool start to the week.
Yeah, I'd say so. Looks like, in fact, at one stage, a couple of days ago, it would have been the coldest of the year, including the likes of Auckland, Waikato, but it doesn't seem to have so much bite the southerly that's going to push through. It'll still feel pretty cool, though, over most of the country tomorrow and Tuesday, and then gradually warms up throughout the week. And then the end of the weekend, on polling day itself, temperatures should be near normal, if not a fraction above, for the first month of spring.
Personal farm report, he's going to be out tagging lambs this week, so we want a bit of sunshine over the farm.
Yeah, definitely, and Louie might have to wait till mid to late week, really. Not that it's going to be too bad in parts of Canterbury, but Monday, Tuesday, not that pleasant, Sarah, really, especially where Richard is a little bit high above sea level. Certainly feel the cold, the chill, so it might be a good idea to wait, say, midweek. And then the temperatures for Canterbury next weekend and early the following week could be in the low to mid-20s. That nor'wester does the trick, as always, this time of year.
Oh, that's one thing, Richard. The nor'westers are here to stay for the spring now, I think. The Waimak was well and truly up and a bit filthy last night. But we don't have to worry about Sarah's weather report. Snowboarding's well and done and dusted, isn't it?
Well, it could be too. Yeah, it could be a wee bit tricky. That's back and forth this time of year. And, Lower, you would have noticed that nor'wester this week as well, a couple of occasions. Hey, guys, I just want to mention, though, a bit of a shout-out to the guys in central Otago. That huge gust that went through Clyde, which is what, Sarah, just a few kilometres outside of Alexandra, that was really unusual. And even though that nor'wester pushed through further north, Lower, as you saw, through Canterbury and then again Marlborough and Wellington. What was unusual about that was Met Service had weather watches out, but very quickly had to upgrade them to warnings. Main reason was the wind was a lot stronger than expected. And very, very quickly, those winds, the isobars on the old weather map tightened up, suggesting some very strong winds. And I think, Lowy, that could be a theme not unusual for spring, say, in Canterbury. But those strong nor'westers could come and go over the next month or so if this is how we're starting the spring month, the spring months already.
It's a bit of a worry, actually, because it is quite dry at home, so...
That's the thing, and I don't know if that's going to change terribly quickly either, Sarah, down Central Way. But as I say, I don't often see those gusts. But we used to have the old crib in Clyde, so I know it quite well. For those who know, Clyde's got a huge tree in the middle. We used to have it there, and then the old place got knocked down. They put motels up, probably the best thing they ever did, actually, to be quite, you know, just on the quiet.
Richard Green, our weather watcher, thank you very much.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Rural Exchange, Radio Live, heading towards news, sport, top of the hour, and weather on News Hub here on Radio Live. What's the week got ahead for you, Lowy? Richard Lowe, our Low, busy week?
Yeah, hopefully get the U-Hoggets shorn this week. Get them in and keep them dry, and I'll give a few pointers to Tony about your recommendations for keeping the bottom tooth on the flat skin sheep.
Yeah.
He's got a big horned merino there that needs the fleece taken off. He wonders if maybe one day, do we keep it for you special?
Big horned merino. He can have it all to himself. He can do whatever he likes to it, including shear it.
Hey, Arlo, do you think that you should save that for the Mackay versus Mackay celebrity shear-off that we're going to have?
No, that one will get a special soft roller, merino weather each for them, a big fat crossbred ewe, and maybe a two-tooth ram from, you know, the meat breeds, say a big Old Dorset or something like that.
No, it's an open-faced two-tooth Romney, and that's it. That's all I agree to under that celebrity shear-off. I don't know whether the celebrity, but the C-list shearing celebrity.
So putting it out there, challenge to Jamie Mackay. Mackay versus Mackay celebrity shear-off.
Open-faced two-tooth Romneys. Mine will be fully crushed out and the belly gone. There you go.
What have you got ahead this week, Hamish?
What have I got?
A few houses to sell?
Houses to sell, houses to list. So if you want to, 021-64-1165, give me a call. Any part of Auckland, happy to refer you to any of the great Bailey's team right around the country. There you go, shameless.
Just before...
Sarah, you've got 10 seconds to tell us what your week entails.
Going down to Christchurch. Very
Christchurch.
Excited.
Week in Christchurch. Love it, love it, love it. We'll do it all again next
Christchurch.
Yeah, look out, Christchurch. We'll do it all again next Saturday morning from 5.
Radio Live's Rural Exchange. Thanks to Carter's Tire Service.